The nutritional shift in the flesh was staggering. The total omega-3 long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids more than doubled.
Doubled, wow.
Yeah, we're looking at over 20% of the total fatty acids in the transgenic group, compared to under 10% in the commercial control group.
Let's quantify that for you, our listeners. If you take a standard 140-gram salmon fillet from the transgenic group, it delivered approximately 2.3 grams of combined eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid,
which meets roughly 67% of the recommended weekly intake for human adults. It completely outpaces the high-value yield from the standard commercial diet.
And flesh quality metrics, including firmness and tensile strength, were virtually identical.
A whole new era of communication in the global aquaculture industry is coming. Now you have the brightest minds in aquaculture right in your pocket. And what's best? You can listen to all of them while driving to a farm, traveling, or running errands. It's never been this good, and it's never been this simple. Welcome to the Aquaculture Podcast Show, the first AI-based podcast in aquaculture, where you'll find cutting-edge insights in everything that's working in aquaculture, nutrition, health, and production. Inspired by the 2024 article titled "Inclusion of Oil from Transgenic Camelina Sativa in Feed Effectively Supplies EPA and DHA to Atlantic Salmon, Salmo Salar, Grown to Market Size in Seawater Pens," by Tosher Douglas R. et al.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at a pretty radical nutritional intervention for farmed Atlantic salmon. Our mission is to see if we can sustain the massive growth of global aquaculture by, actually growing our premium fish feed in terrestrial crop fields.
Yeah, it's the ultimate industrial bottleneck, really, because we're looking at an industry scaling massively to meet global protein demand, but we're hitting a hard physical wall when it comes to marine forage fisheries.
Right.
I mean, the traditional biological inputs, those pelagic fish we harvest to produce marine oils, they're finite.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't just mandate the ocean to produce more forage fish.
Yeah.
So the core question driving our discussion today for you, our listeners, is how do we decouple commercial feed formulations from those traditional marine ingredients while still maintaining those incredibly high levels of long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids?
Because at the end of the day, that premium lipid profile is exactly why the market values salmon so highly in the first place.
Spot on. So this brings us to a fascinating study published in Food Chemistry. It's titled "Inclusion of Oil from Transgenic Camelina Sativa in Feedtowns Effectively Supplies Eicosapentaenoic Acid and Docosahexaenoic Acid to Atlantic Salmon Grown to Market Size in Seawater Pens."
And that was by Douglas R. Tosher, Matthew Sprague, Lu Han, and their colleagues, right?
That's the one. They basically set out to see if we can leverage the massive infrastructure of terrestrial agriculture to do the heavy biochemical lifting that the ocean traditionally does.
And what I love is they didn't just run some small proof of concept trial in a few indoor tanks. They went straight into the operational reality of the industry.
Yeah, they took Atlantic salmon smolts, starting at roughly 187 grams, and grew them all the way to a market harvest size of over 3 kilograms.
It's over 3 kilos, yeah.
And they did this over a 9-month grow-out period in semi-commercial seawater pens,
which is vital for anyone analyzing actual production viability, because moving past land-based tank trials into seawater pens means you're subjecting the intervention to real-world variables.
Right, the natural photo periods, seasonal temperature shifts, farm stressors, all of it.
Exactly. It rigorously tests whether this dietary substitution holds up under actual commercial farming conditions. And the intervention itself is where the biochemistry gets brilliant. They used a third-generation transgenic Camelina sativa oil.
Wisenetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access wisenetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Now, for those tracking crop innovations, Camelina sativa is an industrial oilseed crop in the mustard family, right? But this isn't your standard plant.
No, not at all. It's been precision engineered over multiple generations. They introduce specific genetic pathways.
Oh, right.
Yeah, pathways originally derived from marine microorganisms. And that allows the plant to express the enzymes necessary to build these complex marine fats right there in the field.
Because terrestrial plants naturally produce shorter chain fats, but they lack the enzymes to elongate and desaturate those chains, right?
Exactly. But by engineering the plant to express those specific enzymes, this transgenic camelina oil achieves a profile containing nearly 28% total long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids.
Wow, almost 28%.
Yeah, and in the trial, they took this unrefined plant oil and completely replaced the standard blend of fish oil and rapeseed oil that you'd typically find in the commercial control diet.
While also keeping fish meal inclusions aggressively low, right? Dropping from 15% down to just 7.5% as the pellets increased in size over the 9 months.
Which perfectly mimics current industrial extrusion dynamics. As the fish grow, feed mills adjust the macronutrient ratios to optimize the feed conversion ratio and manage production costs.
So think of the salmon's metabolic system like a highly specialized bricklaying crew.
Okay, I like that analogy.
Normally, they get daily shipments of ocean bricks, you know, traditional marine oils. But here, we're handing the crew land bricks, unrefined transgenic plant oils. Mm-hmm. Can they still build the exact same premium house?
Will they still deposit those essential marine fats, specifically eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid, directly into the fillet?
Right, and do so efficiently. Because if we change the currency in that biological savings account, the system still needs to run profitably.
Absolutely, and the commercial synergy here is massive. Camelina sativa can be grown, harvested, and processed using the exact same massive agricultural infrastructure we already use for standard row crops.
But producing the oil in a field is only half the battle, right?
Yeah.
If you're a production manager running a massive seawater pen, your first question is, will my fish actually eat this stuff?
And will they reach harvest weight on time?
Exactly. So let's look at the zootechnical performance on the farm.
Well, the bottom line performance at harvest was incredibly robust. When those fish crossed the 3-kilogram threshold, there were absolutely no significant differences in total weight gain, final harvest weight, or the overall feed conversion ratio between the two diets.
And survival rates were perfectly aligned too, right?
Yes, completely aligned.
But wait, looking at the data, it wasn't a perfectly smooth line from smolt to harvest. There was a distinct mid-cycle lag.
Yeah, there was.
During the intermediate growth phase, the specific growth rate and the feed intake actually dipped for the fish fed the transgenic oil. If the final harvest numbers are identical, what caused that mid-cycle lag? Is there a palatability bottleneck with these cold-pressed, unrefined plant oils?
You hit the nail on the head. It's a palatability issue tied directly to the plant's biochemistry. As a member of the Brassicaceae family, Camelina sativa naturally synthesizes defense compounds called glucosinolates.
Ah, right, the defense mechanism of the Brassica family. So we're talking about that sharp, bitter flavor profile, like raw mustard greens.
Exactly. Because they used cold pressing without heavy refining, a high concentration of those glucosinolates remained in the lipid fraction. So the salmon experienced temporary feed hesitance.
They just didn't like the bitter taste.
Basically, yes. Okay. The organoleptic properties weren't as attractive as the standard marine oil blend.
But obviously, they compensated later in the cycle to hit the exact same final harvest weight. So, from an industrial perspective, is this bitter flavor a persistent bottleneck for large-scale operations?
Not at all. It's a standard, highly solvable engineering challenge. Feed mills are incredibly adept at managing the sensory profile of extruded pellets. They can easily mitigate this by formulating the diet with specialized palatants or feed attractants to mask the bitterness.
Or imagine you could just tackle the oil before it even reaches the feed mill.
Precisely. Advanced post-extraction processing can neutralize or physically extract the glucosinolates entirely before the oil is mixed into the feed matrix. It's an operational hurdle, not a fundamental biological failure. Once the flavor is managed, the physiological growth trajectory normalizes.
Okay, so the feed mills clear the palatability hurdle, the fish hit their target weights on schedule, but the ultimate validation for big agriculture is the quality of the final product on the processing line. When those fillets are analyzed, what's actually inside that tissue?
The nutritional shift in the flesh was staggering. The total omega-3 long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids more than doubled.
Doubled, wow.
Yeah, we're looking at over 20% of the total fatty acids in the transgenic group, compared to under 10% in the commercial control group.
Let's quantify that for you, our listeners. If you take a standard 140-gram salmon fillet from the transgenic group, it delivered approximately 2.3 grams of combined eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid,
which meets roughly 67% of the recommended weekly intake for human adults. It completely outpaces the high-value yield from the standard commercial diet.
And flesh quality metrics, including firmness and tensile strength, were virtually identical. Though I did note one sensory difference. The transgenic group showed a minor but statistically significant increase in red color intensity.
Which is an interesting side benefit, since managing carotenoid deposition is such a major cost factor. But the far more significant physiological finding lies in how the phage processes the fats internally.
Right. There was a distinct metabolic shift. The hepatosomatic index and total liver lipid content were slightly higher in the transgenic group,
while the overall FLISH lipid dropped slightly to 14.5%.
So wait, if the liver is physically holding on to more fat, while the muscle tissue is depositing less, does that indicate a minor metabolic bottleneck? Like the liver is basically working overtime to process this specific lipid profile.
Working overtime is a good way to visualize it. Biochemically, the transgenic plant oil delivers a very high proportion of alpha-linolenic acid while presenting much lower levels of monoenoic fatty acids.
And how does that specific ratio force the liver to recalibrate?
It shifts the fundamental balance between oxidation, you know, burning fat for energy, and esterification, which is packing fat away into storage tissues. Because of the unique profile, the liver's enzymatic machinery ends up retaining slightly more lipid within the hepatic tissue itself,
which directly drives up that hepatosomatic index. So because the liver is hoarding a bit more, there's a minor reduction in the total lipid deposition making its way into the myotome.
Exactly. It's a physiological trade-off based on the availability of specific fatty acid substrates.
But a flesh lipid content of 14.5% is still well within premium quality specifications for commercial salmon fillets.
Absolutely. It's an entirely acceptable commercial baseline. The liver operates slightly differently to process these plant-based fats, but the end result secures an enormous upgrade in the fillet's most valuable nutritional assets. You're trading a tiny fraction of total fat volume for a massive, targeted increase in eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid content.
It's an incredibly favorable trade-off for the producer. So bringing all these highly technical metrics back to the overarching industrial perspective, what this field trial fundamentally proves is that utilizing transgenic plant oils is a commercially viable, highly scalable reality.
It's a profound proof of concept for the entire supply chain. It proves terrestrial agriculture can successfully synthesize marine profile lipids at scale, relieving the immense biological pressure on the ocean.
We are effectively utilizing massive crop farming infrastructure to turn fields into the new oceans. It's a complete paradigm shift. But before we wrap up today's deep dive, I want to leave you with a forward-looking concept to ponder.
Oh, I like where this might be going.
We've just spent this entire deep dive discussing how we can engineer a plant to synthesize these premium fatty acids. But what is the next frontier for commercial feed formulations? Could the next major leap involve designing precision feed additives that upregulate the salmon's own endogenous elongation and desaturation pathways?
Oh, wow. That is a brilliant theoretical step. So shifting the production entirely inside the animal.
Exactly. What if we feed the fish basic, cheap, non-transgenic plant oils, but we add a highly specialized nutritional supplement that acts as a genetic switch?
We could literally signal the fish's own cellular machinery to upregulate those dormant pathways.
We'd be turning the salmon itself into an optimized bioreactor, manufacturing its own eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid from the cheapest terrestrial inputs available.
By providing the right chemical signals to unlock the fish's own DNA, you would completely redefine the baseline economics of animal nutrition.
It would be the ultimate closed-loop efficiency. We started this deep dive talking about a biological savings account and the anxiety production managers face when changing the base currency of their feeds.
And this trial shows the currency can absolutely be swapped successfully using big agriculture.
Exactly. And the biological assets we get out the other side are richer and more valuable than ever before. Thank you for joining us on this highly technical exploration into the future of aquaculture and nutrition. Keep pushing the boundaries of global food production, and we'll catch you next time.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow the Aquaculture Podcast Show on your favorite platform. And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook to stay updated on the latest episodes and industry insights. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.